Soviet influence and the fact that the Nazis were only too happy to help a country that had bitter quarrels with Israel was sort of more in the nature of a bonus for the Nazis, I think. Hello?
Hello?
Okay. I think that question really probably could be studied a little more and will in the future. I have my own sort of suspicion in some studies I've done. I really feel that the main imperialist powers of the West are one thing they do, or at least this is the way it seems to end up, is they seem to set up opposing states, smaller opposing states in one area of the world, and have them oppose each other, and at the same time, by them opposing each other, gain the upper hand, over the overall situation.
Oh, certainly. Well, I think that both the Eastern and Western blocs specialize in that. I mean, that's how. In reality, that's one of the reasons why both the East and the West and the Soviet Union and the United States really have more in common than they have in opposition. They both really do maintain their control over their relative spheres just by that very self-same kind of activity.
Well, I don't think you could necessarily generalize. Certainly, I think you could say both might operate in that. Both have operated, but I think it's dangerous to make worldwide generalizations. I would, counsel, with a soft touch, both of you, to avoid generalizing totally about,
okay,
imperialist powers doing this or that.
Point I think that, well taken.
Focusing specifically on Israel and the Arab nations, I think in that context, I think to a certain extent, your comment is well taken. One of the, and I would term the present Israeli government fascist with a capital F. The Begin, the Beitarim, the so-called revisionist Zionists, were closely affiliated with Mussolini in both spirit and body.
Right.
And but the Shamir government was even to the right of that. They were it's Yitzhak Shamir, who of course was Begin's foreign minister, was affiliated with something called the Stern Gang, which advocated an open military alliance between Hitler and the Jews. And so I would call the present government of Israel fascist with a capital F, both in philosophy and in practice.
I have no objections to that. I was objecting to the general, the 30
right,
years of governmental
oh, yeah.
history in Israel
right.
being
no,
so
I,
characterized.
I think Zionism, this is what Nip just did was to anticipate what I was saying. Zionism as an institution has metamorphosed in a fascistic direction, I think largely because of the ongoing conflict with the Arab nations that you talked about. And I think one of the things that... that conflict has done, and perhaps one thing to think about, caller, in terms of if you want to think about fascism in a world sense, is that one of the very noteworthy outgrowths of the increasing militarism and I would say current fascist stance of Israel is the right-wing swing, and it's fairly dramatic and well-documented, of a large portion of the American Jewish population, and they wield a very significant influence. I'm not talking now about the Zionist conspiracy or something like that, but they have traditionally provided a very strong element of the American liberal political spectrum, and with the sort of cementing of world Jewish sentiments to Zionism or along Zionist lines, and with the rightward swing of Israel, it has promoted a rightward swing of American Jewry on the whole. And in particular, you see the American Jewish community flock to Richard Nixon in 1972, and also there is a lot of discussion now about Jews supporting Reagan, because of his close support of Israel, and also because of aversion to Jesse Jackson's sentiments in Arabs and so
action,
forth.
Affirmative action, yeah.
So that's something to think about, too, is that the rightward swing of Israel, in addition to providing...
Okay, I think we're back on.
KFJC, Los Altos Hills.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're still with us, caller, huh?
Okay, I did have one other quick comment. I just read a book called Are We All Nazis?
That's a great title. Sounds like a band. Go ahead.
I saw the title at the library. I said, my God, what is this? and it's by a man by the name of Hans Askenasy, A-S-K-E-N-A-S-Y. It's very interesting. He deals with the psychology of mass lunacy, and he uses a lot of analysis with World War II and comments on how 200 million people went to their death, essentially a mad, he called it a collective madness. Hello?
Yeah, still yep. We're listening.
He doesn't really get down, in other words, he can't, he doesn't arrive at any clear conclusions about why. He just says it's a certain kind of environment that causes people to allow themselves to, you know, kill each other and so on, and he sees it happening today for the same reason. I would argue against that and say that there are real reasons that it's based on a profit system and so forth, profits before people and so on. But it is a good book, and I would recommend it for people if they have it. You know, like the last caller mentioned, moral questions and so forth.
Right.
And it also brings up another point. In San Jose, there was and I have to draw this in because you mentioned Lauterbacher and the Hitler Youth Corps.
Right.
And I wish you would go into that maybe a little further. There was a recent happening during a graduation of valedictorian Lizette España, who happens to be from San Salvador, her parents do in the event, was denied the right to give her valedictorian speech. The people, Rodriguez and Cross, are their names, principal and vice principal, said that it would be damaging and degrading to the people. Apparently she had some critical remarks to make about the administration and about some of the teachers. And, you know, it's generally a fairly moderate criticism, but they wouldn't allow her to make that speech. And it just brought to mind the problem with mind control. And the problem with how schools and the whole system of ideas are controlled by things like the school system and newspapers and TV and so forth, and that's essentially what happened in Germany. And the Nazis were the greatest masters at all, you know, of all time in doing that. But it's happening also today in this country and, you know, throughout the world. So if maybe you could do a little more on you know, things like how Hitler controlled
the Hitlerjugend and all that,
a great mass of people. You know, the German people essentially didn't hate the Americans. Studies were done on that. You know, the average German didn't have anything against them. In fact, the higher ranking Nazis had nothing against Americans or British as such. But there they went. And now the communists are a whole different matter. Hate against communism is like
mother's milk.
Disliking the devil, you know, you just do it.
Well, again, I would say that for the Nazis, at least, anti-communism was more an MO. And in other words, they got much of the critical industrial support that they needed from Britain and the United States by representing themselves, again, accurately as anti-communists. And they also, after the war, were able to worm their way to an even greater extent into the bosom of both, at least, the United States and NATO. They had in mind world conquest, the Nazis at least, in other words. And I think today, I think the Nazi contingent within our intelligence system plans to conquer, you know, I think they have in mind nothing short of the total subjugation not only of the American people, the so-called average working American, but eventually I think they plan to put the Rockefellers and everybody else out of business as well. They plan to conquer the world. That, I don't think that was as much a case with, you know, the Mussolini certainly planned empire, but I think that was more of a pure fascist government in the sense of pure anti-communism. Anti-communism, this is a personal opinion from my own studies, but that anti-communism for the Nazis was more a means to the end of world conquest, which lay at the very core of the pan-German occultists, which gave rise to that movement as a spiritual, philosophical movement. You've raised a mouthful. I mean, I just gave you a mouthful back, but the issues you raised are, I think, far too broad for us to discuss in the context here, particularly generalizing from Hitler's Germany to the recent goings-on at San Jose High, as far as, you know, Hitler being, you know, the whole phenomenon of Nazism being ascribable to lunacy, well, all I can say is Hitler was the first low nut, but the whole issue of mind control, both individual and collective, is something we've dealt with in the past on the KFJC triumvirate, I guess you could say, one step beyond Mabe Russell and Hard Rain, and we will continue to do that in the future.
Yeah. I'd better put an end to this myself, caller, because if I started to respond to the stuff that you and Dave said, we would indeed be going around on this all night. And it's certainly a subject worthy of further conversation, and the history of this kind of propaganda activity is worth following up on, too, and that will be obviously coming up from time to time.
I don't know if you... I don't want to sound like I didn't make my point. The only thing I had to comment with San Jose is, you know, mind control is just going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's mind control is overt and covert, and I think your point is well made. It doesn't necessarily have to mean you're strapped down in a chair and you know, needles are driven into your forehead. You know, it can be a lot more subtle and a lot more automatic than that, a lot more a process of, you know, sociological conditioning. No, I think your point was well made.
Okay, keep up the good work.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Have a good night. Bye.
Okay, we've got some lines open. We had them all full, and then they dropped off again. So they're out there, though. 415-941-2500. We do have a couple of lines open. The big casino, folks. So if you want to get on, this is your chance. Give us a buzz. Let us know what's on your mind. Once again, 415-941-2500. And good evening, Sunnyvale. Welcome to Radio Free America.
Hello, guys. Do you take requests? This is Field Marshal.
Yeah, right. The greatest hits,
what
right here.
What would you like to hear?
We'll make sure you listen to it for a long time.
Something like Oops Up Stuff or something like that, yeah. Yeah, I was wondering, it might be an interesting adjunct to this particular discussion is our supposed Nazi hunters. Now, Mae Russell appeared on a summer broadcast that she mentions supposed quote-unquote frauds like Simon Wiesenthal, who are... And she hasn't yet elaborated on it, or I might have missed a tape on it. And it might be very interesting to discuss some of the Nazi infiltration into such groups that are supposedly in favor or go around trying to apprehend fugitive Nazis. It's like bogus organizations. So I do have an article buried somewhere in my newspaper where a supposed ex-member of the Nazi Party should have dug it up. Evidently joined one of these particular groups. I can't remember which. It might be the Jewish Defense League, but that might be an interesting subject to follow up on.
Well, I'm sure there's infiltration now. I don't know what May's referring to. I'm going to let Dave talk about it in a second, but I would, again, be very hesitant to start throwing the term bogus. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I would be very hesitant once again because... again, in a larger sense, as we've been talking about, you know, the one of the main things that defeats certain types of efforts is, and one of the reasons that, for instance, that the left, not being pro-left myself necessarily, one of the reasons the left has never been a political force to reckon with in the United States or almost anywhere, really, is because there's so much factionalism, you know, and there's so much like, well, you're a Stalinist, well, you're a Trotskyist, and you know, one has to be very careful sowing those seeds among anti-fascism, although certainly vigilance is important, right? Right. Okay. Dave, do you have anything to say to that?
Well, a couple things. As far as May's specific discussion of Wiesenthal, I'll give you one interesting thing about what May has experienced with Wiesenthal, and another interesting piece of research. Charles Higham, who wrote a book about Errol Flynn, he was a Hollywood writer. He was not originally a political writer. He wrote a book about Errol Flynn, originally just to be a straight Flynn bio, as he had with other big-name Hollywood stars, and he came across Flynn's Gestapo connections. While in Germany, researching those Nazi connections of Errol Flynn, he stopped by Wiesenthal's to ask him about a particular Nazi war criminal or a Nazi that he was tracing down, and Wiesenthal put him off of the guy's trail, and basically said that the guy wasn't anywhere to be seen. In fact, the guy was right there in town, and a lot of May's suspicion stems, because May has been in touch with Higham, stems from that. Partially the fact that Wiesenthal also, I think, speaking for May here in this case, I think that the fact that Wiesenthal has not shown much appetite for chasing down, in other words, if you're looking for Nazi war criminals, we showed you where a few of them could be found just from documented literature earlier in the broadcast. One of the Nazi war criminals who is supposedly very much being sought today is a fellow named Alois Brunner. Okay, now we talked about how he was working for BND in Damascus as of 1957. His trail has become more elusive. Apparently he was spotted in Damascus in 1982. But I think that is also has a lot to do with May's suspicions. In other words, if the guy's looking for Nazis, you know, he could pick up a book and find an awful lot of them, and find out that in fact they are very much with us today. I mean, the murderers among us. Wiesenthal's book talks about that a little bit. But also, Ted Rubenstein, who does a lot of research for us, has come across something very interesting as well, which is that a lot of people who have contributed to Wiesenthal's organization in this country are, in fact, some big-name Jewish mobsters. The Alan Dorfman comes to mind, the late Alan Dorfman, and I think also the late Meyer Lansky. I'd have to check the names. I'll try and do that for you. But that has a lot to do with it, I think. And, you know, I think the fellow you were talking about was a guy named Mike Connolly, who initially was a Nazi and then went to work for the Jewish Defense League. I don't think he was an infiltrator as such with JDL. I think he's actually, at this point, is pretty close to Irv Rubin, who's head of the Los Angeles Jewish Defense League. I don't think Irv Rubin shows much appetite for chasing down the Galen Gang. You know, maybe it's one thing to go out and chase a few Klansmen or street Nazis, but you know, when the JDL and Wiesenthal start dealing with Josef Mengele's American citizenship circa 1932, then I guess maybe we can view them as being serious.
Well, there's a precedent, don't forget, Menachem Begin, even the warning article back in 1948 written by Albert Einstein, if I've got my information correct, warning about Mr. Menachem Begin. Right now he's being swallowed whole as, supposed Jewish leader and staunch guardian of the Jewish state. Well, if you look back from the KFJC research, you find that's quite the contrary. So there is a precedent for this type of thing if this does occur. And, it's not something I just brought out because it's on top of my head. I just think there might be some validity behind it.
That's true.
It makes sense, though. I mean, if you're going to get a huge organization going and you want to get some odd job provocateurs and maybe poison the point of view, it helps your cause to put up an organization that is, bogus in a sense, and make the whole cause then and Nazism look really bad. So like COINTELPRO,
Right, right.
So, and I also wanted to mention, so there's Russian influence in, country like Hungary, where there still might be Austro-Hungarian influences in Hungary, as far as family ties are concerned, that might, stave off, any serious commitment to the Communist Party line. As was mentioned earlier on the program, that it's a possibility that maybe Soviets might have drawn in some ex-SS men. You also got to, realize that some of the countries that are so-called Soviet satellite are really a lot more Western than we care to think about. Bulgaria with its drug connections near Turkey and everything, and a few other things like that. And Romania's attempt to join the Olympics this year, so we might have a sort of a tilted view of how powerful the Soviets actually are in conjunction with their satellite countries.
It is dangerous to generalize. Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, and Finland fought with the Axis during World War II. Certainly, I think you can expect to be some residual fascist elements in all of those countries. I mean, political sentiments don't just evaporate, with battlefield defeat. That's something to keep in mind. Something for you to look into there, Field Marshal. Again, we'll give you the research information, or Tom Davis Books information later in the broadcast. But the book that we read about the Gaddafi, Galen, Skorzeny connection, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, discusses the fact that the post-war Bormann financial network, largely through the very large Argentinian Jewish population, which, if memory serves me correctly, is the world's sixth largest, has been, in fact, a very generous supporter of Israel, and that, in fact, Jews have actually been incorporated into the Bormann financial organization, and that this Bormann support through the Argentinian Jewish community of Zionism and Israel has been one of the reasons why there has not been more vigorous pursuit of Nazi war criminals by Israel. But that's, again, Paul Manning, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and, we'll give you information about where to get that at the end of the broadcast.
Yeah, a couple of two quick points, concluding points. It's very important to make sure that every point that is made in the past Nazi connections, American affiliation with Nazi business, is brought up to the present, because a lot of people have sort of a sense like this is in the past, it's buried, it no longer exists. It's very important to hint on it. Hey, it's still present, it's still there. Take past events to make a connection there and make sure people remember it, because people sometimes, I think, my personal opinion is that Americans are notorious for forgetting history. And it's very important to bring up this very sordid detail of our particular political past and keep hammering it as far as the present is concerned. and you know, make people aware, hey, it's not dead, it's alive and well, if anything, it's getting worse. And second point, believe it or not, this is going to sound like a really corny statement, but actually Nazism begins at home. Anytime you have a high rate of domestic violence or anything like that, you sort of feed the area for things like Nazism, which actually feeds on absolute discontent. And that's something I think people should think about. You know, Nazism just didn't come out of thin air. It began somewhere in someone's head and was later passed on. And people sort of remember that. You know, what can I do to combat, you know, things like fascism and stuff? So make sure that you don't have an environment that actually breeds it. Let's say you have, like, stagnant water, it's going to breed mosquitoes.
Right, well,
if you have a particular area, neighborhood that's particularly tense and people dislike each other, you've already got the seeds basically there for things like fascism.
Well, I apropos of your two points, real quickly, just to kind of paraphrase what you were just saying just last, stereotyping and scapegoatism is the seedbed for fascism, basically. As well, you can start taking a group of people, saying they're all the same, and then blaming things on them. You have got a fine basis. What you said first about not forgetting brought to mind something I noticed earlier when I was rereading this Otto von Bolschwing article. They talk about von Bolschwing when he was being interviewed for this job at Trans-International Computer Investment Corp, TCI, and they asked him about his time in the Gestapo prison, where he was not mentioning his Nazi ties, of course, and he says something to the effect of, oh yeah, here it is, quote, "That was not a good experience. One should forget it because it only is a negative approach to life to think about bad things." Well, what that reminded me of very strongly, as you probably remember, when we talked about Otto Ambrose, one of the only civilians ever convicted of war crimes, who was brought into this country by J. Peter Grace to help out with some of his business concerns. And Otto Ambrose, when asked about the involvement of IG Farben and slave labor at Auschwitz and things like that, said something to the effect of, well, it was a long time ago, it concerned Jews, you Americans think about these things too much, right? Some very sort of similar comments on people who'd rather that you didn't, in fact, think too much about these kinds of things.
Perhaps because, as George Santayana, the Spanish philosopher, said, very well-known phrase, those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it. And two quick points, Field Marshal, actually good to everybody, really. You may want to grab hold of that von Bolschwing article for yourselves, because it was...
yeah, I've read it. It's just available at my public library. And I think Martin Bormann and Nazi Nexon might also be available at my local public library. I have to check it.
Well, so check it out, but the point is the San Jose Mercury is definitely available at everybody's local library. That was November 20th, 1981, and you should grab a hold of that. Also, become a little more conspicuous than you all have been on phone-in talk shows on other stations. You know, if you want to, it's a tremendous vehicle for communicating information. If you want to get the word out, that's sure as heck the way to do it.
Yeah, well, hopefully KFJC's listenership will sort of boost up, because it's a real nerve-wreck hanging on the end of the station, and this is something I feel very emotional about. I'm just afraid if I get on some unfriendly grounds or there's red-binning or something, I might go, wah, lose my cool and make a real... Not that, but a lot of programs about psychology and stuff you'll never get on.
Take a bullet.
Subject. So it's really, really tough. That's why programs like this are so important. It's to pass the word about programs like this and bypass the rum cakes on the other stations, because they change their format.
Well, I don't know. Now, let me give you a specific example. Now, all right, on KPFA, on William Mandel's program last Monday, I should say, they were talking about the Olympics and the Soviet boycott of the Olympics, and they were talking about it in terms of Soviet dissatisfaction with American policy. I was interested to listen, because I know there's a reasonably large intersection between our audience and KPFA. We undoubtedly have a fair number of people who do listen to KPFA, to see if anybody called in about the Western Goals LAPD scam that we've talked about so much. Not a word was heard, you know, and that kind of sitzkrieg, shall we say, is the kind of thing that's going to get you all made into soap. So you may want, I got a knock on that last one. Certainly listen to KFJC and get your information here, but you'd be surprised how much you can get out on other stations if you put your...
I'm not telling people just, you know, not to call on station. I'm saying it's not going to be an easy road, and that's why maybe I don't... You know, I'm not always on top of it, you know, calling in, because the format on AM stations is very much psychology, what's your problem, this and that, much so than it was in the past.
Well, you have to pick your spots. This is, you know, wait until there's a show that has something specific, like, mm-hmm. say, one of the ones on KGO where, you know, Eason or somebody's talking about some specific thing.
Certainly terrorism gets talked about an awful lot, and,
the bogey.
You know, it, here was an opportunity for those people who've been talking, you know, again, referring back to the Mandel program, for people who've been listening here to edify some of the KPFA listeners. But apparently, people out there would rather complain about how KPFA doesn't cover this stuff, and yet when they have a chance to inform some of the people at KPFA about it, as I say, Sitzkrieg.
Yeah, well, any little bit helps. I just decided to bring up that point for anyone who thinks it's, you know, really easy.
I hope you don't feel like that's been hung on you.
No, we're not
Phil
talking
Marshall.
About you specifically.
I'm aware of the situations, and I think people like KGO and stuff like, I'm just a guess, that they might have this stuff in mind because the public, I think, has become a little more aware, especially when there's a lot of detail in the press about terrorism and stuff, that they might get a few people gone that it might blow the whole thing apart. But it's definitely, you know, and... if you listen to Mae Russell and all the so-called assassinations she hints on, like, you know, Jessica Savage and everything, I think the news media is going to get very, very shaky, especially since it's coming close to election. They're going to start clamming up about this stuff. And you won't see too many opportunities on the major stations to come in and just bring it forth. But I'm saying if the opportunity is there, it's fine. I'm trying to discourage anyone, so give them a warning.
Right. Well, that's all the better reason. If you make noise now, then the absence of noise later on will be all the more
notable. I choose this avenue as a place to make my noise. So, you know, that's basically my home ground. So this is sort of answer to Dave. This is why not, you know, really hitting on some of the other stations. It's probably that's why.
I'm not talking to you as an individual. This is not a personal condemnation. I'm just saying that to all of the people who are out there, this is certainly the claim that there's nothing you can do is nothing but, as far as I'm concerned, justifying inaction. Remember, if, you know, borrowing a phrase from Smokey the Bear, only you can prevent fascism.
I'm gonna put a small cap on this one now, since we are coming up to the top of the hour. Phil Marshall, good to hear from you.
Okay, take it easy. Keep up the good fight, and I'll do whatever I can, however little that is.
We know you're out there pitching, guy.
Okay, take it easy.
It's much appreciated.
Okay?
You take care. Bye. Bye-bye. All right, and just want to mention here, we got another hour to go. We are going to be taking one more time to you that coming up in July 8th and 15th, July 8th from Fickle Stuff. I might mention that... we mentioned a couple times during the show that a lot of the books that people have mentioned that are very difficult to find, there is a place that you can find them. And right now, and again, we always stress this, we have no commercial involvement with these people whatsoever. It just happens to be, as far as most of us know, the only source for a lot of this material. We're referring to Tom Davis books, formerly Research, formerly Aries Research. And you can write to Tom Davis for a book list on these very self-same subjects. You can write to him at Tom Davis Books, P.O. Box 1107, Aptos, California, APTOS, 95001-1107. It's one of those tricksy business zip codes. So Tom Davis Books, P.O. Box 1107, Aptos, California, 95001-1107. Okay, now, once again, 415-941-2500. We do have lines open, and Dave...
I'm going to read the bibliography. We have no calls, so if you want to get through, now is your time. 415-941-2500. Do not delay. Basically, we're running down a bibliography of the shows, of the books, rather, used on the show. We started... basically, the first book was The Yankee and Cowboy War by Carl Oglesby, soft cover. Berkeley Medallion Books, copyrighted, 1976. Ah, there we go. One line's lit up. We still have two open lines. A book called Galen, Spy of the Century by E.H. Cookridge, hardcover edition, Random House, 1971. Also a paperback edition, Pyramid Books, 1973, is also available in that. A book called Scorzani, subtitled Hitler's Commando, that by Glenn Infield, copyrighted 1981, hardcover edition, St. Martin's Press. A book called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by Paul Manning. That is copyrighted 1981. Lyle Stewart Press is the publisher. A book called The Bormann Brotherhood, that authored by William Stevenson, S-T-E-V, not P-H. Soft cover edition, Bantam Books, copyright 74. Hardcover edition is also available in that by Harcourt Brace Jovanovich. I believe the copyright date was 73, if memory serves on that. And that pretty much takes care of the books that we've used on this program. Now, as far as newspaper articles, first of all, the Otto von Bolschwing article from the San Jose Mercury News, November 20th, 1981. An article about Helena von Damm, that from the Chronicle, August 3rd of 1982. And also an article, a section of an article from Gung Ho Magazine, Gung Ho's issue of May 1982. The article was The CIA's Man for All Nations. That, by a man named William Seymour, S-E-Y-M-O-U-R. Okay, and that give you the information about Helmut Stryker. So that those are the sources for the broadcast this evening. And also an allusion to two newspaper articles from the New York Times, I believe March 8th, 1982, and also March 19th of 1982, those about Hans Langemann. Now you can check the New York Times guide on that for the exact dates. Look up Langemann and they should have that. And also a brief reference also to a book called O Vatican by Paul Hoffman, which had Hans Langemann's work infiltrating a BND spy ring into the Vatican. So that will give you a lead on where to find some of this information if you'd like to check it out for yourselves.
Indeed. We're documentary heavy here, folks. We got so much documentation, we're giving it away. Okay, we do still have a line or two open, 415-941-2500. Now we're in the middle of a full-bore stall until we get the information as to who's on the line to you, to us, and hopefully that will be coming in real quick and we can go to the phones. If not, I'm just going to jump right in. Yes.
While we're doing the full-bore stall also, one last thing. Radio Free Europe, Jack Anderson column from the San Francisco Chronicle, February 20th of 1982. And that Chronicle column was entitled Radio Free Europe in Hot Water. Okay, so that'll give you the last of the sources there for the broadcast this evening, for those of you who may not have gotten it. Okay, and do, you know, tape the broadcast. It's a very good way of preserving the information. You can go back and, you know, go over it, take notes, transcribe whole portions of it if you'd like to, and blow people away, hopefully.
Okay, well, now, I'm glad we got done with this before we had to start humming and whistling. Anyway, we're going to the phones, 415-941-2500. When we hang up, a line is open. Good evening, Palo Alto, and welcome to KFJC.
Hey, good evening to you. Happy Solstice Day.
Happy Solstice.
Yeah, interesting topic on your show tonight. I hate to drop the bottom line right away, but I was taping May Bressel's show today and was interested at the correlation of data banks that's going on down Texas way. I wonder if you could help me out on connecting the transplant of the CIA structure and information network, collective bombing and whatnot, to this continent. To the correlation of data banks that they're doing now.
Well, the reference, you're talking about the May Bressel tape last night?
That was this afternoon, I think.
Well, it was hard rain this afternoon. It was May Bressel last night.
Okay, yeah, it was her offering the new caveats about the big computers in Texas.
Yeah, there's a huge computer center. I've forgotten the name of the organization, but it's down in Austin, and it's going to be its head. I believe it's a corporation which has basically been it's closely affiliated with the federal government, and it is sort of a cooperative effort among a number of large data processing and computer companies. Its head is Bobby Inman. Formerly, I believe, deputy director of the CIA and very closely affiliated with Task Force 157, which is a naval intelligence hyphen CIA operation headed by Henry Kissinger, according to Penny Lernew and in her book In Banks We Trust, and notably with one of the main operatives in Task Force 157, the aforementioned Edwin Wilson. Okay, and of course, data banks are something I'm not a computer whiz, and so I can't really speak in an authoritative sense or in a hardcore technical sense, but it is very, very possible to access computers, and if you have computer information in one place, of course, it can be tied in with a computer operation somewhere else. One of the things to think about in that regard is the Western Goals Computer Bank, which there's a computer operation for Western Goals in Germany. And, of course, the thing that I was referring to before the break, the Los Angeles Police Department's, formerly their Police Disorder Intelligence Division, the PDID, now their Anti-Terrorist Division, had been working notably with a fellow named Jay Paul and also Mr. Scheidecker, had been working very closely with Western Goals. And Western Goals is an extremely reactionary organization headed up by the late Larry McDonald formerly and involving a number of different people, some Third Reich veterans, some Gestapo people. General Singlaub, I believe, is a member of Western Goals. I know that Roger Milliken, a director of W.R. Grace and a member of the Knights of Malta, is. It's a very far right-wing organization, and certainly those are two data banks to think about. You know, again, as far as correlating and accessing computers, I'm not really, you know, those are two of the main organizations to think about. That huge computer operation down in down in Austin, which is also the same place where the University of Texas is. And I know U of T has a huge computer huge computer education program going, which is also receiving funding. Those are two to think about as far as actually how to access them, or, you know, the technical links. I don't know much about it because, you know, in a hardware and a software sense, I'm a computer ignoramus, which is unusual in this valley. But those are a couple things to think about in that regard.
Yeah, I don't know much about it either, but it appears that the definition and characterizing people by the statistics of the things they do in the associations they keep sounds like a pretty scary, downright scary thing, and seems to be a direct descendant of transplant of intelligence organizations.
Well, we have talked in an earlier broadcast. We've read an article by Jack Anderson stating that there are certain elements that are allied with the Reagan administration that literally want to start putting people down in childhood and computers as possible antisocials. You know, I mean, and then when you start talking about that kind of stuff, indeed, caller, you're talking weird. You know, you're talking danger.
Yeah, that's very closely affiliated with the Nazi racial theory, in which the so-called criminal biological types were a major focus not only of study but also of classification and communication. A name to think about in that connection as well is the organization Interpol, now called the International Criminal Police Organization, formerly the International Criminal Police Commission. Long-standing affiliations with Third Reich through Otto Steinhausel, Nazi police chief of Austria, and Reinhard Heydrich, who we talked about, his connections with J. Edgar Hoover and Hoover's affiliations with TRIFA. J. Edgar Hoover was actually appointed by Herbert Hoover, if you want to trace those links going all the way back to, if you heard the first Radio Free America broadcast, the immediate period of anti-Soviet reaction. And Interpol was created in 1923 as a private corporation. It's not a public organization, although through the National Central Bureau, each affiliate country's head office of Interpol, it links the police of 100 different nations. And as late as 1973, there was a fellow named Paul Dekop, a former Sicherheitsdienst man, a Galen agent, a former SS intelligence man, who was head of, he was president of Interpol, and I think his secretary general at that point was a guy named Jean Nepot, who was a Vichy French police official. So the links there are very wide, and Interpol was tracking, you know, radicals and criminals of all kinds. It does some legitimate police work. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not totally classifying that organization as a monolith. It's important to realize there are divisions, but Interpol had strong inclinations in that regard. And during World War II, one of the provisions of Interpol due to early infighting was that the Austrian head of the Austrian Federal Police would be president. And during World War II and prior to it, when it was under Nazi domination, Interpol's their magazine did talk about various criminal biological types, you know, and classifying criminals by Jewish race and so forth. Again, we talked about that in the second Radio Free America broadcast.
Oh well, that sounds like a difficult assignment to research down the connections between the personnel doing all that work. So I'll just have to thank you for working on that yourselves, and maybe jump a little farther and see if there's any coherent advice for avoiding that kind of action nowadays. Is it to become a businessman, to go into small business so you contribute to the economy and therefore are less likely to be discriminated against by the people that are...
Well, that's an individual solution. As far as a societal solution, I think that what we're speaking toward is that people getting angry in a controlled way and becoming politically active in an intelligent way and doing their best with whatever resources they have to inform other people in the most calm, persuasive manner so that those people will know, and beginning to use that kind of focus in all political decision-making.
If you think, caller, that becoming a small businessman is a good way of escaping nuclear war, go for it.
Right. Exactly. Those red and white striped awnings will cover a multitude of sins, but they ain't much good against fallout.
Yeah, that's a good point. A point well taken.
Okay, anything else, caller?
I guess that's what cassette tapes are good for. I'll just have to keep passing them around, and thank you for
Amen.
Such good product.
Yeah, well, we thank
Amen.
You for passing them around. Thanks again.
All right, on. Bye.
Good night. Okay, we got a couple lines open, 415-941-2500. Good evening, Campbell. Welcome to KFJC and Radio Free America.
Well, nice to be here. I've been listening to you guys for a while. I called after the Uncle Sam and the Swastika program, and I was the caller who mentioned being a member of the company that's owned by the Grace Corporation.
Oh, right. I do remember that.
Oh, okay. Well, we've had another visit from a Grace executive, and he's not any of the ones that had visited before. He had visited, but he wasn't one of the ones I had talked about. And I just have to say that, as you guys so often mention in the broadcast, that you don't want to characterize any group or organization by certain individuals or members or even people controlling that organization. I have to say in all fairness that I've been recording these tapes, and some of the management of my company knew that I had this information and went out to dinner with them and actually brought some of it up.
They brought it up to you, like to talk about it, you mean?
Well, no, they brought it up to him.
Oh, brought it up to him?
Yes, a Grace executive.
Well, how very interesting. What was his response?
His response was that he knows Otto Ambrose or knows of him, and he dislikes him quite a bit.
No, one thing I'm curious about, caller. How, you know, did you tell, you know, the people that you'd been taping this stuff? I mean, was it you'd brought it up to them yourself?
Sure, I brought it up. It's a tight knit company, and I brought it up that I've been taping, and this stuff was all very interesting. And of course, I think you'll see I'm pretty innocent as far as having any real firm convictions, other than I just I observe bewildered from afar, listening to you guys since last November. And that's why I was just bringing this stuff up, and everybody in our company is pretty good-natured. We don't mind being owned by W.R. Grace. So they just brought it up with this guy in conversation. And in all truthfulness, he said that he pretty much disliked all the nasty historical things that happened also.
That's a point. Let me expound on that very briefly. It's a good point to make. And again, you don't ever automatically equate a person with the functioning of an organization as an institution. If you meet someone who worked for the CIA, you don't say, you fascist or you baby killer, this thing. It's a point we made in connection with the Green Berets. I've known a couple of fellows who were Green Berets and I got along with very well. I knew a guy who was a Special Forces Intelligence Officer whose uncle owned Hughes Aircraft, and he was a great guy. We had a great time, you know, one time, you know, hoisting a couple of tall, cool ones and kicking stuff around. I was one of the relatively few people he could sort of let his hair down with, you know, and who would know what he was talking about. It was really good. You don't automatically equate an individual with any kind of an organization. All right, give you an idea. Up here at KFJC, we had a written offer from a former local coordinator for the John Birch Society, of which Larry McDonald was the head, to participate in the Guns of November. There's a fellow who belongs to the John Birch Society with whom I share research. Take truck with the organization as a whole, which I have no use for, but this guy seems to me a straight shooter, and he gives me great information, you know, helps get me books that I don't have, and I give him some of my duplicates, and he's a frequent participator here on One Step Beyond and these other shows, or on Radio Free America, One Step Beyond and the other call-in shows, and has routinely contributed great information. You wouldn't necessarily know. I mean, there are a few things that he's said from time to time that might clue you into the fact that he's affiliated with the Birch Society, but not in a doctrinaire sense, and he's a really good fellow. Now, you don't say, oh, you're affiliated with the John Birch Society. Well, you must be a fascist. I'm not going to talk to you. But it's just, you never equate an individual with an organization. That's why, you know, the point we made was that a lot of American intelligence officers from various of the agencies came across some of these CIA Odessa connections and reported them to their superiors, and you know, eventually they were squelched. You know, same thing with Britain. If you're gonna automatically equate a person with an organization, you're gonna make a mistake, which was made a lot during the Vietnam War, in which returning veterans were called baby killers and so forth, and they were alienated, and a lot of them, on top of the scars of combat and so forth, bear the psychological scars of that to this day. So, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, and I think it's a point, you know, perhaps I run on a little too long, but I think it's a point that should be reinforced. You don't automatically assume that the person's cool either, but you know, secrecy is the stuff of fascism, and that's why we encourage people to talk about this stuff. Get the information out, you know?
Sure, and I think it's important, too, for just the overall, objectivity and consciousness of all the listeners, and I think it supports your points quite well, to understand that maybe you and most of your listeners are objective people and are not fanatic leftists or fanatic conspirator theorists. And rather, they're just logical thinking people, and they understand that there's a myriad of things that can come together. And a lot of these connections are maybe a chance or somehow a common denominator among things that different groups want, but aren't necessarily some giant master plan, but that one group hooks up with something they have in common with another group, and here we go, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately, of the people who believe in simple answers to complex problems, we don't hang out with many of them. One of them happens to be president, which is a little nerve-wracking. You know?
Yeah.
You know, one thing along with what you said, caller, well, we actually do have people from both the doctrinaire left and the doctrinaire right who listen to this broadcast regularly, because I'm just judging from the communications we get from time to time, and that, to me, there's nothing about this whole effort that I take more pride in than that fact. Maybe we're one of the very few things those two could agree about, you know? And of course, most of the people, as you said, fall somewhere in between there and are just trying to take that stuff up. That's why I blew my stack at this fellow, our caller, who calls himself the gadfly.
That was pretty entertaining.
Well, the point is, he said, you know, basically, since you don't seem to trust Western sources, I'm going to read you from Stalin, which, as far as I was concerned, you know, I'm not going to go on about it. We use nothing but Western sources here, and I just, you know, I lost my temper because I considered it, I thought it was just a shallow attempt at tossing red paint on us.
And what he means is we don't take William Colby at his word, so that's not trusting Western sources, right?
Well, the point is that, you know, when you examine, you have to check Anthony Sutton for his sources, because he is capricious in his use of those. That was the point I was making, and I could have indicted Sutton for his endorsement of, I can't remember the fellow's name, Gary Allen, who Sutton relies on, but Gary Allen wasn't brought up for discussion. The material from All Honorable Men, it was something that the listeners were familiar with, but that's the point. It's not that we reject that caller's... I obviously disagree with his views, but it's not that we reject, differing viewpoints. On the other hand, if somebody's going to play dirty pool or deal from the bottom of the deck, you know, we're going to call them on it. But you know, we're pretty straight shooters here.
We're talking a vast metaphor salad up here tonight, Dave.
Yeah.
I hope you'll listen to that on the tape. That's amazing. We just strung about 700 of them together.
I guess that in the final synthesis, there's just no substitute for good hard work, and whether that's at your workplace or whether that's researching, it pays to do your homework. And try to be authentic in describing and observing what's around you.
Arbeit macht frei.
Yeah, to make one last little point on that, as you said, at your workplace doing research, and this is something I feel very strongly about, there is no cure, there is no substitute for a little hard work in making decisions. And I think that that's where a lot of this stuff slides right past most people. Politics, you know, business as usual, people don't want to work at thinking about things before making decisions, like what they're going to vote for.